Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, Camille.
Good morning. Hello.
Good morning. Yes, I'm having some technical difficulties, so I'm actually, I was calling you, and you were already on. I saw you there. So now we're having some technical difficulties, so I'm on the phone and on the computer. So we are going to do our best.
Okay.
How do you pronounce your last name again?
Clydish.
Clydish. All right. Thank you. We're going to go live in a minute.
And it's Dr. Defaint. How do I pronounce?
Huh?
How do I pronounce your name? Dr. Defaint?
Daphne, D-A-P-H-N-E. All
Daphne.
Classes. Yeah, whichever one you're comfortable with.
Okay.
All right. We're going to do our best.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Some friends you gain, some you lose. In the back of your mind, you're looking for love, but found the blues. That's why I come from far away, to take away the blues. And I've come to say, I wanna be more than just somebody. I wanna be more than just a friend. I want to be more than someone special, 'cause special friends sometimes they won't understand.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, and happy Wednesday morning to you. I could say happy snowy Wednesday morning here in Connecticut on this gorgeous spring March morning. We are experiencing snow. As a matter of fact, the superintendent of school just called in a weather forecast that schools will be on early dismissal today. So what you know, we are living in the Northeast, and this is what happened. We too here on the station, we are experiencing some technical difficulties. However, we are just going to be doing our best to give you the best conversation that we can give you this morning. I am your host, Dynamic Daphne, and it's a privilege and an awesome opportunity for me to be on this broadcast with you again. I have another amazing woman who is doing God's work, and, you know, forgive me if I mispronounce her name. Her name is Camille Clydish, and she's going to tell you the correct pronunciation when I get her on. She's been in the virtual green room since about a quarter or 20 minutes to 10, and she's doing a phenomenal work. She's the author on a work known as Nazareth, the Height series, and you're going to hear her amazing story. But I want to remind you that we encourage you to call in. The number to call is 646-915-8166. Again, 646-915-8166. 8166. Momentarily, I will get the chat room up and running. So we want to encourage you to call in. We are going to spend our time conversing about her her story and the work she's doing, and also the work that she's looking to do in the lives of young people. So without any further delay, I want to bring on live to you across the world my distinguished, honored guest, Mrs. Camille Clydes. Camille, good morning. I know I butchered your last name, but help a sister out.
Good morning, Dr. Daphne. You were wonderful. It was Camille Clydes. That was correct.
Oh, Clydes. Oh,
you did great.
I get an A plus, and I'm just so excited this morning, as I was mentioning to the listeners, we are having some bit of difficulties. However, we are going to do our best, and we're going to have a stimulating dialogue this morning. I know we have some new listeners. There's a friend of mine here from Hungary, and she's going to be listening to the show for the first time. So I pray that it brings some enrichment and enlightenment into her life. Would you just take a few minutes and please introduce yourselves to the listeners? Tell them who you are and the beginning of when you came into this world. I mean, like your childhood and all of that.
Okay, certainly. My name is Camille Clydes, and I was born and raised in California. And I immediately attended a boarding school, a predominantly black boarding school, 45 minutes away from Philadelphia. And I had not returned to California since, and that was when I was 14. And from leaving the boarding school, Pine Forge Academy, I traveled. I attended a school, college in Alabama, and then from there I transferred to a college because I just, for some reason, I just had to live in New York City. That was a desire of mine. So I went to and finished college in New York City. And from there, that's where my love of writing began. Because anyone who's lived in New York City, the city is filled with so many layers of just dynamics, the people, the arts, the culture. And from New York City, I had a desire that I just had to live in Europe. And so I got in a program where I was able to teach English in Warsaw, Poland. So yeah. I just had a traveling bug. I wanted to travel Europe. It was my desire to travel the world, but I did not get around to that. But who's to say I won't do that? And
exactly.
Finally,
life has only just begun, you know?
Correct.
And
correct.
You are so fully aware that we are in seasons of our lives, and
Absolutely. We
never know what season is going to take us where. And the best thing to do is to always be prepared and be willing, because when we are servants, we don't know where we will be needed when, so we just got to be ready to go.
Absolutely, and I believe that life is in seasons.
Yes.
So in that particular time, I was in the season of travel. And I love people. I love people from all walks of life. Anyone will tell you, I will talk to anyone with a pulse. I have been known to talk to bums because sometimes they have great stories. And I truly believe that everyone has a story.
Exactly. And that's what is important. You know, we all of us in society, we have different labels for the circumstances that we see around us, like
correct.
Mention about you are known to speak with bombs, and I love to use the wino in my story, especially when I teach around team development,
mm-hmm.
because if you observe from a distance a group of winos, you know that they collaborate and they
right.
have a goal and they have a team, because they come out each day, and they pooled their financial resources, and they put it towards that bottle. And what they do, they come back, they open the bottle, and they take a sip until that bottle is depleted. And those of us who are not alcoholics or we are not winers, I don't see us that consistent to the goal that we want to accomplish.
To
but if
goal,
you notice those winers, we can always learn something from all the situation and issues around us. But a lot
that's
of times
absolutely
we use
right.
the, I beg your pardon?
That's correct. I have learned that. I don't see people on levels. You
that's
can
right.
learn from people from all walks of life. And that's
right.
what's helped me in writing.
That's
I think
right.
the key
that's
to
right.
writing is you have to listen. You have to
exactly.
really
exactly.
key in
but
to
I don't,
people.
Camille, I don't want us to go into the writing aspect first because I want
okay.
us to talk about the things before you began writing.
Right.
Let's talk about who you were then, and then I want to go
okay.
into what propelled you into writing and all of that. But let's
okay.
talk about, you talk about being born in California and then you went to boarding school. You know, when you
yes.
said that, my antennas went up because I am from a culture that believe that the best education to be had is through boarding schools. Because
oh,
a lot
okay.
of the affluent people in Jamaica, West Indies, your children or your child went to a boarding school. I mean, they come home on the weekends and for the holiday, but they go there. They live at the boarding school. But then when I came here to America, I find out the culture is slightly different.
Right.
So
when people hear I went to a boarding school, it's very unusual. And it is a predominantly black boarding school, and it's a tradition in our family.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of no question. I thought I would get away with staying at home, but my mother pulled me in and told me I was going.
Mm-hmm. You know, my son, I have an only child, and my son went to boarding school part of the time. And then he had some challenges, and then he came out of the boarding school. And it was when he came out, as a matter of fact, he went to Valley Forge Military Academy. That's where he started his
mm-hmm.
high school. And when he came home and he was struggling with finding who he was and all of that,
mm-hmm.
one of the things I discovered in a conversation with Givonte was the fact that while he was away at Valley Forge, his friends who were left home here in Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
they wrote him and they, like, tell him all this story that his mother did not want him. That's why she sent
oh.
him away to boarding school. She didn't want
right.
him there. And when he came back and we were in this very intense conversation, Camille,
mm-hmm.
and he said, Mommy, as I look over my days at Valley Forge, he said, I look back and now I realize the sacrifice it was for you to send me there. He said, majority of my schoolmates were from overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And he began to talk about the positions that their parents held. So for them, it was such a luxury. And he did not realize that it was being jealous of these other children, why they would tell him that. But, you know, as teenagers, your friends always know best. So whatever
right.
your friend is saying. So therefore, you rebel and you act out and you do the things that it takes you to get out of the school so you could come back and suffer with them, and that's what they want. But everybody, you know, kids learn their lessons. So I know the quality of discipline and value that boarding school instills in a young person. So
it
I
really
know
does.
You are a cream of the crop.
It teaches, thank you, it teaches you independence.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, when I left the home of 14, I never returned to California. I wanted
wow.
to travel. And it just changed, it really shaped my worldview and how I look at life.
And people.
And people, right. Yeah. You had to learn how to get along because you're in a dorm with people from different walks of life. And you have to learn a sense of loyalty, a sense of sisterhood. That our boarding school happened to be co-ed, but they were extremely strict. It was so strict where we couldn't even walk on the same sidewalks as our male students. That's ridiculous. But they were so concerned about us being together.
And the men had to be gentlemen.
Right, right. They had to. They taught the boys in the school to take our trays. We would dine together, and they were taught how to take our trays, how to pull out the seat for us.
Wonderful. They were being groomed to be husbands.
Exactly. Exactly.
And leaders. Well, Camille,
absolutely.
My friend, I did mention before that my friend Giselle from Hungary is here, and she's listening. So say hello to Giselle.
Hello, Giselle. How are you?
Hello.
Camille.
Hello.
She has the biggest grin on her face when you were talking about Europe, because you know that's where she's from. So she held that with pride. Yes, yes.
By the way, I really enjoyed living in Europe. I love the lifestyle there. For some reason, I don't know, Europeans really enjoy the simple things in life. Everything is made an event. You could walk down an old town, and it's just walking. Or you could stop by a cafe, have a coffee, and spend hours and talk. They really value just enjoying life.
Yes,
and sometimes simple things. Minimalist. I learned how to become a minimalist when I lived in Europe.
What countries did you reside in? Giselle is asking you.
I resided in Poland, Warsaw, Poland.
Poland. She's from Hungary, she's telling you.
Okay.
Yes. It's beautiful. I have not been to Europe yet, and it's on my places that I want to visit. And I coordinate a French cultural exchange program, and as I interact with the chaperones and the students who come here, I realize the exorbitant lifestyle that we embrace here.
Exactly.
This part of the world. It's, you know,
absolutely,
people take the time to embrace and nurture relationship and person. I think we take the stuff and puts it in the way of bonding and appreciating people.
It's just the way that they treat relationships and people. And like I said, I became a minimalist in Europe. I did not realize how excessive I was, because the American lifestyle is excessive. That's just our way of life.
Yes,
and I didn't realize how much I was until I lived in Europe and realized, you know what, I don't need all of these things.
I don't need this to make me happy. Exactly. I want to take this opportunity to welcome guest 1323 to the chat room. And you lived in Europe, and when did you come back? When did you come back to the United States?
I you know what's funny? I had all intentions of moving to Europe to live the rest of my life. But that, like we said, seasons, and that changed.
That's right.
Because I loved it so much. I said, oh, wow, this would be such a wonderful place to raise children. Because in Warsaw, let me just tell you, the crime is nothing like it is in the United States. You will actually go shopping and see a line of babies in their strollers outside of the grocery store, lined up while their mothers are inside shopping. And you know what?
Wow.
Not one person will touch that baby.
Wow, Giselle is throwing her head in agreement, in affirmation to what you're saying.
Amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
It's amazing. I never knew it was possible. And that's all the time. You'll go shopping, and you shop every day for your food. You don't. There's no such thing as leftovers. So you're going to the shops every day.
Mm-hmm. And I met a gentleman last year who was a chef in Europe for a while, and that's what he mentioned about. He said everything we make is fresh because we shop for it every day.
Every day. Every day,
every day, and
it is like I said, the image of the baby strollers being lined up outside of the stores. It just was I loved it because it was just a reminder that it's truly different here in Europe because that could never happen in the United States.
Oh no! You know, and it's a shame, but it is what it is.
And I want to say maybe
that... So in the early days, I beg your pardon?
I wanted to say maybe that's unique to that part of Europe. I'm not sure because that's where I resided. Okay. Maybe that's part of the... Actually, Poland is Central Europe. It's not quite as Eastern Europe, but I'm told that's how it is in all of Eastern Europe.
Yes. Well, you can only speak of what you saw, and what you saw was reserved eating. We just have to, but we are all a work in progress as a country, as a community, and as individuals. We are all a work in progress, and we just have to keep doing what is healthy and wholesome to us. And who knows? The next generation will probably come up with something that we did not come up with and to embrace.
That's right.
So long as there is hopes and we have the desire, we will have greater things. So in the early days, what was your career? Did you start off as a writer or you started something else and transitioned into writing?
I never... writing was, I wrote, poems in high school, but I didn't take it seriously. I was just too broken in my early days to consider myself an author or to really have any clear goals. I guess that's why I wanted to travel a lot. I didn't have a clear goal. I didn't have a strong sense of self. I was trying to find my way. And it was just very difficult for me in those early years.
You know, let's talk about that because this is what this show is all about. It's about inspiring, informing, educating, and lastly, empowering its listeners. And a lot of times I have experts and guests on the show, and I have to be like, pumping and pumping, because a lot of successful people, they tend to tell the beginning of their stories
That's correct.
The end of their stories and the middle section of the story where all the stuff takes place. Nobody wants to talk about it, and that's what helps other people.
That's correct.
So
you're absolutely correct.
Yes.
I was a broken girl. I became in the midst of all of the, I guess people looked on our family because I went to boarding school. I came, and this is hard for me to admit, and I don't talk about it a lot, but I came from a very affluent family in California. My grandfather was the first black millionaire in California. He created the hair food, and a lot of black women know this, the pink hair food that came in a jar. A lot of them grew up on that, putting them in their hair. And I don't talk about this, so this is rare for me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been revealed to me that I'm going to have to start telling my whole story. That's something
that's right.
Say. So a lot of people looked at our family. They admired us. I remember one time my grandfather was... This was when I was a little girl. He was featured on Soul Train. He was a big deal. He used to pick me up in his Rolls Royce. I remember take him going to the banks and people would fall all over him. You would never see, it was like he was a celebrity. So I grew up with that. But I was hurting. My family concentrated on making at the dinner table. We would have beautiful dinners every weekend. But the men in my family, my father, my grandfather, my brother, who were all involved in the business, would talk about business all the time. There was an element of love missing. It was always how to make the next dollar. And that's wonderful. I applaud that.
For the family, yes.
I applaud
They were so programmed and being good providers, but monetary and material. Just like when we talk about before, when we mentioned that in this part of the world, we allow all this stuff to get in between the relationship.
Absolutely. So I grew up with, I was really loved on condition. My grandfather, I remember him having business meetings, and I was taking ballet classes, and I would always have to do a twirl for his business partners or something. I just never felt love for me. And my father was very removed. He was, you know, some people are just emotionally not invested in the family, and that was him. He was there, but he was very quiet.
Yes.
Worked a lot. They spent a lot of time in the business. So I never felt the love from my father. So while I was at the boarding school, during my graduation weekend, it was a huge deal. It's graduation weekend. People traveled. My family traveled from California. I found out that my father was leaving home. He was going to marry someone else. In that moment, my life changed forever. A part of me died. I felt betrayed as if it happened to me.
Exactly.
I felt my mother's pain.
Yes.
I felt betrayed. I felt lost. I didn't know what to do. And this was at the time in my life where I was going through transition. I was got accepted to college. I needed my family to be intact, and it fell apart. And so when I tell you I suffered from, I went to a dark place. I didn't know who I was. I literally couldn't stand myself. I would avoid looking at mirrors because I couldn't stand to look at myself. And it was a process when I tell you. That place, it shaved years off of my life that I spent in that place. Yes, I was traveling. I was able to do what I wanted to do, but I was the walking dead, as you would say. I was I died inside. And so I just thought to myself, and mind you, I was born and raised in the church. So church is not new to me, but I didn't have a personal relationship with God. I think I was listening to Lucy Winans, and something about her song just pricked my heart. And I just said, you know what, I don't want to go through life like this. There has to be a better way. In spite of what's happened in my life, in spite of all the failure, and during all this time, my grandfather had died, and he had gotten with a bad accountant who all along was doing terrible things behind his back with the money. And the business totally tanked. So during all of that, you're talking about loss after loss. So I said, okay, in spite of all the losses in my life, there has to be a better way. I want to be delivered from this place. I don't want to live like this. I don't want to hate myself anymore. I want to have a better self-image. I want to be able to look in the mirror and appreciate what I see. And so, like I said, life lessons are a process, and they're a day-to-day process. It doesn't happen overnight.
That's right.
So I began I began changing the music I listened to, and I began to pray. I began to write journal, prayer journal, journaling, what I call it, where I just wrote out my thoughts. And during that time, I was able to be completely authentic and transparent without anyone judging me, to get all the negative feelings out of what I was facing. So as I wrote, I was able to see it clearly, and I was able to deal with that on a day-to-day basis and rehab, if you will, my spirit and my soul. And so that's what happened in my life.
Yes, so Nazareth Heights is really your life and your story.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And what an amazing thing, because, you know, as you said, that you realize that you must begin to tell your entire story. And that is powerful, because a lot of the world is only telling part of their story. And, you know, Camille, you know what I have come to realize?
Mm-hmm.
Is that part of our story helps nobody.
That's
because
correct.
That part that we remove from the story is just that section that will impact the person who is hearing the story. And we need to, once we become servants and we become a channel through which others will view their lives, we must be obedient and know that it's not about us. It's really not about us. It's
That's
how
correct.
We get another person by the hand. And now with the use of the internet and virtual services and things like that, taking a person by the hand now doesn't literally mean taking them by the hand and holding them, but it can be taking them by the hand by them listening to this dialogue that we are having wherever in the world they are. And they can say, I know that on such and such a day in March, I was listening to this lady who was in Atlanta, and what she said has changed my life. So I want to thank you for doing this. I really want to thank you.
You're welcome, more than welcome.
Because, you know, this is powerful, and there are lots and lots of people who are hurting. There are adults who are hurting. There are children who are hurting. And it is our responsibility to help alleviate this hurt that people are going through. So I want to, and I must tell you, we can spend as much time as you want to, because I did not invite another guest to the show today, because I have been, my internet has been down from when, so I've been having a lot of struggles here, but no enemy and no Satan is going to stop what we are doing here. You know,
we'll
be a good friend, God's work will be done, so. I'm so thankful that we are able to be having this dialogue, because somebody needs to hear this story. And I am such an advocate for journaling.
Yeah,
you know,
it's very therapeutic.
I tell people, if you are not doing it, you must begin. You know, I was speaking to a friend of mine, Lorna Owens, down in Florida a couple of weeks ago. She was on the show. And she remembered clearly when she was journaling and got the name, and the women gathered. So she thought it was a book. So she said, Daphne, what do you know? After 3 years, I said, oh, I don't think I'm going to write this book. And then she went to sleep, and the spirit showed her, this is not a book. It's an event you're supposed to be doing monthly, where the women gather and they talk about girl stuff and all of that. Now she just launched 3 weeks ago the TV show and the women gathered. And she said it was not until she went back in her journal and look, all the things she had journaled about it and what she was supposed to be doing to that thought. So journaling is such a powerful tool that we can use
it really
to direct
is.
Our lives.
It really is. It changed my life.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about your journaling, and then let's talk about how you transition from your journal into the Nazareth Heights series. And how did the name Nazareth Heights came about?
Okay, like I said, through the pain, I journaled my way. I prayer journaled my way out, literally.
Mm-hmm.
Through prayer, a lot of prayer and journaling. And I just became, it was like a metamorphosis.
Mm-hmm.
I became a different person. And people around me could see the transformation.
Mm-hmm.
I was more at peace, more confident. I was just, I loved life. I could look in the mirror now and appreciate what was there. The self-hate was gone. And so from there, then I was able to realize, you know what? I'm here. I have a purpose unique to me. And I want to fulfill that purpose. No more pity parties. I don't care what happened in the past, what pain happened. I don't want to let this dictate my life. I want better, despite what happened. I want better for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so the book, I had an English professor that always told me, never force a story.
Mm.
Wait till a story finds you. And I never understood what he was talking about, because at the time I was just so that was a time where I really wanted to write. And he always used to say, Camille, never force a story. Let the story find you.
Wow.
So
that
one
powerful.
Night, right, it was it's a powerful statement. And he always used to tell me that, let the story find you. And I always, Dr. King, what are you talking about? Let the story find me. And I understood what he said when one night, my son was about 5 months old, and he just had a very difficult day. He was fussy. I couldn't get him to get, I couldn't console him. Just a lot of crying. He wasn't napping well. And so by the time the evening came, he finally went to sleep, and I just felt like I had been run over by a Mack truck. All I wanted to do was take a hot bath and just go to bed. But this image of this young woman came in my mind. She was in a high-rise apartment building looking out of the window and crying. And it was in this inner city. I could see all this image in my mind. And I'm one of those writers. Every writer is different, but I'm one of those writers that I see my story. I see my story, and then I write. And so I was compelled. I took out my laptop, and the introduction paragraph came out effortlessly. And then I stopped in the middle of the paragraph, and I said to myself, I'm not gonna complete this. And when I tell you, it was flowing like just effortlessly. The setting, the plot, the imagery, everything came together. And I stopped because I said, I don't want to write in the genre of young adult. That's not something I want to do. I want to write Christian fiction for women. I don't want to write young adult. And I remember literally slamming the laptop down and putting it away. I'm not going to do this story. Young adult is not for me. Teenagers, I don't understand them, even though I was a teenager myself. That's just not something I want to do. So, to make put this story, long story short, let's fast forward 3 years. My son is now 3 years old. And, I mean, when he turned three, I experienced a series of loss. It just seemed like everything that could go wrong went wrong. And on this particular day, I had news of another loss. And I remember just collapsing in my chair and just saying, what? Lord, now what? I mean, I just feel helpless. This is terrible. Everything is going wrong. And so the image of this young woman who now is Adriana Williams and the main character of Nazareth Heights, came to my mind again. Do you not know the same image she was in the high-rise building, crying, tears coming down her face, the same imagery of the city? I could see everything clearly. Nothing changed. My son's three.
Wow.
And it was the
and
same image.
Later.
It was the same image as he was, as it was when he was 5 months old.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I just surrendered to the moment, and I took out, and I don't write longhand, but that, I just had to get the story out. I picked up a paper and pen, and when I tell you, the story just came out. I had gotten, I wrote it so fast, I had gotten to chapter 4 before I knew it.
Wow.
The plot, the setting, the characters, 4 main characters, all different personalities, everything, the imagery of the city, everything came together. And if you talk to a lot of authors, that's kind of unheard of. You have to, a lot of have to go to workshops to find out how to get a character, how to get the setting. Everything came to place. And the story just flowed.
That's the difference, Camille, when you know you are only a vessel. It's
correct.
Like your professor said, never force a story.
Correct.
Isn't that
he
powerful?
He said never. And I realized then, I said, oh, this is what Dr. King is talking about. The story found me, and
that's
I did
right.
not want to write it, but it found me. And when I surrendered to the moment, everything just came out. I fell in love with the characters. They're 4 teenagers who live in a very crime, the borough of the city is full of crime. And they were courageous enough to make a decision that they wanted to get out of their environment through their grades. They knew that that's the only way they could get out. So they made a pact in the 6th grade to remain on the honor society so that they could get out. And they see it. Especially Lacey, one of the main characters, she sees it as really a life and death situation. It's either we do this or we stay in Nazareth Heights and die because there's so much crime. People don't make it out. If we don't have a goal, we're going to succumb to our environment and be lost. So they attack their goal and pursue their goal with such passion. It amazes me because when I write, the characters just take on a life of their own. I cannot tell you that I have a set format.
That's
it just kind of develops.
You are a vessel.
I never have had a problem where I've had to be stumped and how do I make this character believable. That's never happened with me. They
because
just spring
the
to life. And I thank God for that. They just spring to
wonderful.
Life.
Wonderful.
So
wonderful. And this is what, you know, this is why we all need to be obedient and to be attentive to our calling.
Right.
Because
that's correct.
You remember when you slammed that computer and you did not want to write.
Yes.
And the story still waited for you and 3 years later presented itself again.
Right.
And you were smart enough to say, this is not about me. Let me move Camille out of the way so God
right.
can do his work.
That's correct.
And this is what all of us need to do. Keep in run the race we were called to run. Too many of us trying to run other people's races. And this is why
That's
we
correct.
Cannot get off from the starting point. Because we
That's
are
correct.
Running other people's races.
That's right.
So,
I'm a firm believer that we all have a unique purpose and plan.
Oh, yeah.
I can't do your plan, Dr. Daphne. I can't do it. I can't fulfill what God had for you to do. I can't do it. That's unique to you.
Exactly, and it's the same thing. I can't do you. However, I can collaborate with you to
That's
help,
correct.
To expose you. And this is what I tell people. I said, no, you know, people say, oh, you like Les Brown. I said, no. I'm not trying to do Les, and Les is not trying to do me. But together we are making a difference in the world. And it doesn't mean we cannot share a platform. We can. But God allows each and every one of us to shine uniquely for his kingdom.
That's correct. I believe that.
You know, it gives me the chills to just listen, because a lot of us are holding ourselves back because we are not concentrating on the race that we are called to run. And I just pray that everyone who listens, whether they are listening live or they come back to the archive, please identify what your race is. What were you called to do? Were you called to be a cook, a baker? What it is? All of us came into this world with unique skills and talents that we need
That's
to
right.
embrace.
And if you're not, if you don't take quiet time, and if you're not
mm-hmm.
still, and if you don't just take time to remove yourself from
mm-hmm.
the so-called rat race, you're
mm-hmm.
not going to understand what your purpose is. Sometimes
that's
you
right.
have to take time away. And that's
mm-hmm.
what happened to me. I had to remove myself
yes.
from
yes.
the circle of friends, from everything that was going on, to really find
mm-hmm.
out what
mm-hmm.
is my purpose.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because I facilitate a lot of retreats. And you will be amazed to know how many grown folks are afraid of quiet time. When
right.
I do a three-day retreat, we start with like an hour of quiet time, and then we step it up and increase it as the 3 days come over. And people are afraid of it. And they cannot see themselves, you know, doing the activity, and they'll try their best to disturb people who are doing that. And it's a challenge for people to really be quiet. They always have the radio going, the TV going, the music going, or the chatter. People don't like themselves to spend quality time with who they are.
That's
and
correct.
And we have to
That's
go
correct.
Back to basics. We must go back to basics.
And sometimes
so what,
if you don't like yourself, you don't want to be alone with yourself.
That's
just
right.
a fact.
That's right. I tell people all the time, I say, I love me. I spend all the time with me. I don't have no problem staying with me. I love me. I enjoy my company. And we have
right,
to
because
learn
you've learned to like
who
yourself.
We are. That's right. Because, you know, everybody's tripping over, oh, do you want to do this and do that for that person? What are you doing for yourself?
That's
Start
right.
To treat
you have to help yourself.
Like the kings and queens that you are.
That's
and
right.
And then you're going to be ready to do for somebody else. Yes, so then you finished that first book, and what happened?
And it changed my life. People around me just could see the difference. I have never been at such peace than I am now.
Mm-hmm.
And like when I write, I'm not writing to see what sells, what will make money. I write out of purpose. I want
mm-hmm.
to help someone. I write because I enjoy it. Because it makes my life whole. So I think that's why those characters are so believable. People, I have had readers say, you know, I had an experience when I read your book. Because when I write, I don't come with any other motives. Like, what's going to be hot? What's going to sell? Are they going to like this? I don't come with that. I don't have that in mind.
What's
I come down...
What's
who is going to like this? Who's
going
to... That's not what I come when I write. I come with just wanting to write.
Mm-hmm.
Coming from a place of wanting to write. I'm a storyteller, wanting to
yes.
tell a good story. And that's all I have in my mind.
Oh, that is so powerful. What are some of the feedbacks that you have gotten from readers? Especially the population of the demographic of the characters, the three teenage young people in the inner city. When people who read the book from the inner city, what are some of the feedbacks that you have gotten?
Well, they're surprised of how real my depiction of the inner city is, and how literary it is. It's not a crass depiction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the inner city is, I've lived in Washington Heights and Harlem, and this was pre-Giuliani years. So it was pretty rough, pretty rough. I mean, it was bad, a lot of drug activity. So I know what I'm, that's another thing, I know what I'm talking about when I talk about
that's
the
right.
inner city. I've
that's
been there. I've, and this is a girl coming. This is a girl coming from the suburbs,
mm-hmm.
who didn't know anything about the inner city. But I had to live there because I was in college, and that's what I could afford. So
yeah,
I know what it's.
You know something, Camille? That's what you are thinking literally. But I so strongly feel that the reason you were placed there is for what you're doing now. You
and
are
I believe that. I believe that too, because I know when I write, I know what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
I know what it's like to get up for school and have to dodge crackheads in the street when you're trying to get to the subway. I know what it's like to hear gunshots. I know what I'm talking about when I'm talking about
right.
the inner city. I also
right.
know what it's like to be in that surrounding and see families there. That are, because this is another thing why I wrote, and I want to make this clear. When you think of the inner city and the hood, you always think that's all there is drug dealers, crackheads. You forget that there's families there that are striving for goals and have goals and are inspiring to do great things.
Mm-hmm.
And just because they're living in the quote-unquote hood doesn't mean they don't have those goals. And
that's
what impressed me. I was surrounded not only by crackheads, drug dealers, whatever, but also who was there were these amazing families that were getting up every morning, going to work, going to school.
For someone who has worked in the inner city, I have worked in the inner city, and you know something? The crackhead and those people, they are just hanging out. They are just loitering. They really
right.
don't belong to those communities.
Right.
They just
that's not the true community. What you don't
that's
hear, and this is
community.
Why I'm sorry. This is why I wrote this story. I want it to be known that there are children in the inner city who, in spite of what their surroundings are, have purpose in their heart.
That's
to,
right.
You know what? No matter what's going on, this is what I want for my life. I had a
right.
book reading, and I was challenged on that. This
mm-hmm.
man said, you know, you've lived in Washington Heights. You're telling me that four kids are actually going to make a goal to stay in the Honor Society? He pretty much laughed my story off. I said, wait a minute, sir. I've talked to three young people firsthand who were born and raised. One was born and raised in the Bronx. One was born and raised in Washington Heights. Guess
mm-hmm.
where they went to school? One just graduated from Harvard. One
Thank
graduated
you.
From Columbia.
Yes.
One graduated from NYU.
That's
the
one right.
One that graduated from Columbia goes to my church. He was from Brownsville in Brooklyn, one of the worst neighborhoods in Brooklyn.
That's right.
He is a top lawyer in Atlanta. So I had to challenge him. I said, wait a minute, sir. This is what I know firsthand. It's not true.
That's right. You are.
I know kids who came from that and are Ivy League graduates. So, yes, it's possible. So Nazareth Heights is fiction based on reality.
That's right. That's right. I want to take a minute to remind callers that you can call in with your questions, 646-915-8166. I am in conversation with the Nazareth Heights author and creator, Mrs. Camille Clydish. So call her, and, you know, if you're listening from the inner city and you have a firsthand experience about what we're talking about, let us hear from you, because a lot of times, people are on the outside telling these stories, and they don't get it. They don't understand. But here, you're hearing from someone who is telling the story from the inside. So let us hear from you, 646-915-8166. And back to you, Camille.
Okay.
Yes, so we were talking about a gentleman who was thinking it wasn't possible. You know, a lot
yes,
of people,
yes.
they are
he's
so
basic.
Far.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah,
continue.
I was saying. Yeah, I was saying a lot of people on the outside, and seeing that we're talking about the hood and the inner
mm-hmm.
city,
mm-hmm.
they are not 20 minutes away from that community, but they are so isolated, and they
mm-hmm.
stay far away from the things that are not familiar to them. They don't
mm-hmm.
try to get close to understand. They do that
right.
with communities, and they do that with people. You know, they'll talk about the Latino, and they'll say, oh, those people, they say the same
right.
thing for the Black or whatever. It's those people. And I said, no, it's not those people. We need to get to know them because they are no different from you and I.
That's right.
No different. So, now, so that's only one book. Let's talk about one of the other books that you have.
Okay. And so I have, there's the follow-up. The book too, it just continues with their story, and it's quite a story because of their
mm-hmm.
environment. Their environment contradicts everything they're trying to do, so
mm-hmm.
it's layered with so many themes. There's the characters are multicultural, multigenerational,
mm-hmm.
Different. They're from different socioeconomic backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
We have one. There's a main character in the Nazarethites series who happens to be a male, and that's rare for young adult, for there to be a young main character that's a male. And
mm-hmm.
he's part of the Faithful Four, but his father's a doctor. And he
mm-hmm.
happens to be in Nazareth Heights because his father has set up a clinic in
mm-hmm.
In the heart of Nazareth Heights. So
mm-hmm.
I wanted to feature minority kids who came from different backgrounds, because we don't all come from the hood. So I wanted that to
that's
be highlighted
right.
as well. And so the girls in the group called the Faithful Four, they're able to experience his life when he invites them. For instance, there was a time his grandmother was visiting from Trinidad, and she was
mm-hmm.
making roti, and he wanted to share the meal with the girls. So it's amazing. They had gone down the, you know, if you've ever lived in New York, you could be in the hood two blocks away and then walk up three blocks.
That's
and all
right.
of a sudden, you're on an affluent block with all these beautiful brownstones. And
mm-hmm.
this was the case. Terrence lives on one of those blocks with the beautiful brownstones. And it's called Scholar's Row, to be comparable to the famous Stryver's Row in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever seen Stryver's Row, it's gorgeous. The brownstones are absolutely gorgeous. And so that's where Terrence's home is. And so as the girls are walking, because a lot of them live in the projects, they're just
mm-hmm.
looking in. And, you know, in affluent homes, how they'll pull back the curtains, and you could always see inside their beautiful living rooms. And they're
Camille.
Yes.
Camille, I must tell you, someone in the chat room says, I came from the hood. Hey, hey, hey. So he or she, they're very excited, and they say it's just chilling. It's chilling to think of, I guess, some of the thoughts that people have about the hood. So it's good to know that
yeah.
you are telling this story. So
I needed to tell the story of the families that lived in the neighborhood that I lived in. I needed to tell
right.
their story. I needed the readers to know there's another side. There's a flip side to this.
Mm-hmm. This person, Camille, live in the projects, and you know, it would be a wonderful thing if they would call in to just share a little bit about their experience in the hood. So let me give them the number again, 646-915-8166. It would be great to hear from you. Yes, it had to take turns going. Yes, so, you know, give us a call. Let us hear you on the air, share this. So, Green Beasley, give us a call in 646-915-8166. Let us hear from you so you can share, because a lot of amazing things happen from the hood, and people think that,
absolutely,
you know, yes, growing up, we had to take turns going to school. We share the pants. Isn't that amazing? Oh, call us. Please call us, 646-915-8166. Isn't that amazing? Because I know growing up in Jamaica, and when your parents, when their clothes would get old, they would cut that up and make some new clothes for the children. But who would think in New York City or in any of the other?
You'd be amazed of what, particularly Chicago, the inner city.
Oh, my God. What a story. Thank you so much for sharing that.
And what you go through and the amazing people. I mean, you're talking about heroes. People don't even know the half of the heroes that live in those neighborhoods who just, I think it's so heroic to live in an environment and then you purpose in your heart, you know what, I'm not going to go this route, even though everything around me is saying I'm going to do it. I'm going to do something else.
That's right. That's
no
right.
matter how hard it's going to be, I'm going to
make a difference. Yeah.
But to strive to make a difference.
You have to take a stand to say the buck stops here, and you can't keep passing. You can't keep passing it. You have to take a stand. And it is our responsibility to make a difference in our communities. It does not matter where we are from. When we look on the children in today's environment and society, and they have so much, yet they think they have nothing. And here is somebody saying they would go to school every other day because they had to share that school pants. It would be amazing to hear from the person they are doing in life now and let their story be heard too. Because these kids, if they don't do laundry for 3 months, they can still go to school because they have enough clothes and yet they're still not satisfied. Oh, it's amazing. I'm just hoping that Green Beardsley call in and let us hear from that. So it was good to know that what you're saying there, it's not just from an author's perspective, but here is somebody who is affirming what you say to be part of their life, and that's powerful. That's powerful.
That's correct.
Yes. So let us continue. We're talking about Terrence's father.
They're walking down the street and just in awe of that block because it's such a contrast to where they live. And they're peeking in the windows that have the curtains drawn back and saying, you know, one day we're going to live like this. And they exchange their dreams. You know, what are you going to do when you graduate and go to college? What's going to happen? And one of the girls said, well, one day I'm going to live on Scholars Row and have a beautiful brownstone just like this. And then when they finally reach Terrence's brownstone, which is his mother comes to the door, a very elegant, beautiful Trinidadian woman who's a lawyer. And they're just in awe of her because she's just the epitome of elegance and grace. And when they go into the home, it's just beautiful. And so they get to experience another lifestyle that they would not have been exposed to if they had not known Terrence. Because Terrence comes from, he's in Nazareth Heights, but he's from a different place because his father's a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's highlighted as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's so it's different because culturally, with the Trinidadian ethnicity and the socioeconomics of the father and everything. So they were really seeing it through different color glasses, you know?
Correct.
What they were seeing is that if Terrence's family can do that, we can make a difference.
Right,
because
it was close to home. And so that was something that they could touch and see. Right.
Yes. And nothing is out of our reach. Now, what they said, if you can believe it,
right,
you
that's
can achieve
correct.
It. But
that's
a lot
right.
of times we are not having because we don't believe that we can achieve. And that's what is different. I want to remind the number to call in is 646-915-8166. So let's talk about the books you have and the work that you are doing for young women?
Yes. And I have developed seminars because of what I went through earlier in my life. Seminars and called Strong, Courageous, and Committed. And that's where I basically go to different youth groups and churches. And I'm able to speak to young women, and they're able to go through this seminar to tap into their gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you talk to young women nowadays, they really suffer from low self-esteem, from what they see on the media.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't feel like they can live up to the standard
that's
of beauty.
Yeah, that's right.
It's an impossible standard of beauty, if you ask me nowadays. It's just you can't match up.
Camille, is this Sunday a group of us were talking about that? Because these girls, the clothes that they are wearing is like a wristband. Because they have the skirt, you know, the tennis band that you wear around your wrist. That's the size of their skirts.
Right.
And I said, you know, values and morals is gone out the door. There is nothing left to the imagination anymore. And I'm saying, I'm sorry for the poor men and boys. Because
women
are naked in front of them. There is no pride.
Right. Right, you're absolutely correct. It's what you see on the music videos. And when you're a young person, of course, it's natural you're going to look at the music videos. And that, if they feel like, okay, that's who I'm supposed to be.
Mm-mm.
But they have a beautiful example, and a lot of them, unfortunately, don't tap into it. We have a first lady of our country that is a beautiful example of what a woman should be and inspired to, but a lot of them, unfortunately, they don't relate to that. But this, my program is designed to uplift and empower our girls, and the program is designed to inspire young women to become smart, poised, and confident. And we incorporate group discussions. We do role playing, other fun activities, and we teach the young women to advocate for themselves, using their voices and body
not your body parts. That's right.
Right.
Not
advocating
and not your body parts. You know, you can still keep your clothes on and be the best husband. You know,
and that's correct. In utilizing prayer and scriptures and resources to promote change and positive results. And our topics will, you know, they include self-esteem building, self-presentation, communication, etiquette essentials. That is very important. When they learn that, they get excited because we go over how to do a dinner party, how to set a table, how to make your home a lovely oasis. Now, I know some will say, that's passé, this is the 21st century. But let me tell you something. Nothing's more empowering for a woman to know how to run a beautiful home, and then go out into the marketplace and be able to work it in the boardroom. I think
that's
you should be able to do both.
That's what we're talking about. That's what we're talking about. That's power.
I mean,
that's where the power comes from.
That's power. Can you imagine being one-sided? You're working it in the boardroom. You're making it happen in the marketplace, but your home is in shambles?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I tell the girls. You don't want to have your home in shambles. You want to be able to go out in the marketplace and make an impact, and your home reflect who you are.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's right.
You know,
I
teach them how to set, you know, doing dinner, how to set a simple table, how to cook a quick meal.
They just know how to dip and pick up the plastic fork out of the box. They don't understand what it is.
So we take it a little bit further. Because if you are successful in the marketplace, you're going to be having guests coming to your home. You're going to need to know how to entertain.
That's right.
And I also teach them entrepreneurial skills, turning their passion into profit.
That's right.
So when they learn, when they walk away with all of that, they realize, wow, it's not all about my looks. There's a little bit more to me than what
that's
I look like.
But I tell them the looks doesn't last forever because, you know.
No, it doesn't.
In a few years, things start slip and sliding.
Beauty fades. Beauty fades. It really does.
It slides all over the place, and then you don't have anything else for him to be watching. Because
beauty fades. Or who's to know you might get in a car accident or scarring. I don't want them to concentrate on that.
That's right.
I want them
to
realize there's more to them. And when they realize, wow, I have this gift, I could actually turn my passion into profit, I could make it happen in the marketplace and then do something at home, throw a dinner party, they walk away feeling empowered. Their countenance change. They walk differently. I also teach diet and exercise. When you know your value, you eat differently. You
That's
actually
right.
want to walk because you
exactly.
know that, you know what? I know my value now.
That's
so
right.
I'm going to change the way I eat, what I
That's
do
right.
for exercise. So it's really, we have a good time. And
That's
I
right.
love doing it.
Is that program, is it available in other states or only in Atlanta?
In Atlanta right now, I'm always, that's what I'm, my goal is to make it in.
Yeah. I
throughout
think
the country.
You and I need to continue that conversation to see how we
okay.
could collaborate on doing something like this in Connecticut.
Absolutely. That's wonderful.
So let's continue that conversation because
Absolutely.
That is something that is needed. Our young women need to understand about that. So now for the young people who are listening, if you would design a plan for them to stay the course and really follow through to know that there are changes that can be had in their community, but it is their responsibility to create that change. What would this plan of action look like?
Three words, and this is what I tell the girls. You have to be strong, you have to be courageous, and you have to be committed. Strong in, you're going to stand up for your beliefs. Strong in, you know what, this is what everyone else is doing, but I'm going to make the choice to do something different. Courageous in speaking it. It's one thing to decide it in your heart, but it takes courage to voice it. So the second step is to voice it and express it with your actions. That's courage. And committed is when you stay committed to your goal. If this is the goal you set for yourself, you have to stay committed to see it through. Strong, courageous, and committed. Those are three words that should be embedded in your soul for success.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Camille, as you look over your life, growing up in an affluent family, having what the outside would look on the inside of your family, they would think you had the best of everything, where you
right.
were on the inside, so you knew what was missing. If you had your life to live over, what, if anything, would you change, or would you have liked to change?
That's a very hard question, because I am who I am today because of my
mm-hmm.
past. But I would have to say that I wish my family focused more on love. I had love from my mother. She's an amazing mother. But I guess I wish I had more of the love and attention from my father. That's
mm-hmm.
what I would have wanted to change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Everything was about business all the time. And I just wish he would have focused on us, me. That's
mm-hmm.
what I would have changed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I would have changed. I wouldn't have wasted my life hating myself.
Mm-hmm.
That takes a lot of years away.
Were you an only child, Camille?
No, I was the middle child. I was the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And that has issues within itself, being the middle child.
Middle child.
I was the middle child.
Yes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very important that parents listen more, because parents are always so busy providing and telling, and we don't
right.
take the time to listen to our children, so we really don't know what their needs are.
Right,
you know?
That's correct.
We don't know what their needs are, and this is why We need to listen. We must listen to young people. Do you have any of your books close by you? There, would you like to read portion of any
okay,
of the
I do have one
have
available.
Huh?
I do have one available. It's from my romance, my Christian romance series.
Woo! Yeah,
and that's,
Giselle
I didn't mention
I,
that.
We are smiling. Giselle and I smiling. What's the name of that one?
Spiritualize.
Spiritualize. But
yes.
Giselle and I, we're going to listen, and who knows, we probably get some romance in our life.
It's a beautiful, I'll give you the backdrop of the story. 4 years ago, the character Kai Valentine, she's an accomplished ballerina. She was studying at the world-renowned Juilliard in New York City.
Ooh.
And she's just such a talented dancer. But she happened to live in, you know, being a student, she lived in a very crime-ridden neighborhood. She was renting a room at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And on a hot summer afternoon, she had a chance encounter with the infamous uptown gangster named Roman.
Mm-hmm.
And Roman had observed Kai for about 3 years. He observed her. He noticed that there was something different in her and that he was just drawn to. And it wasn't necessarily what you would think the attraction between a man and a woman. She had a light and peace in her that he wanted to know what it was all about. And at the time when he was approaching her, he was at the point in his life, and I call it where everyone comes in contact with their spiritual man, where they began to question the things in life. What is my purpose? Why am I here? Is there a God? Is there a higher power? Is this all that life has to offer? Do I want to continue down this road? So he was at that point where he had come in contact with his spiritual man, and he was facing some deep issues that he could not find the answers to. But he saw that in this young woman that perhaps if I talked to her, I could get in contact and try to get some of these questions answered. So he finally approaches her. And this is in Spanish Harlem. And he approaches her on the happiest day of her life because she just found out she had landed an audition with a very well-known dance company.
Wow.
And she despised him because he had a reputation. And she just couldn't stand. Have you ever had someone walk up to you, especially in the inner city, that you just could not stand? You were saying, say to yourself, just get away from me. Don't talk to me.
Underneath your breath.
Right. You're just like, oh, please help that person not to talk to me. So, but they had this long, hour-long discussion that was very deep and had a lasting effect on their lives. And that's in the first book. So in the second, the new novel coming up, after about 3 to 4 years of separation, he talks to her and he disappears from the neighborhood. She can't find him. And she went on to become a very world-renowned ballerina. She's dancing with the top dance company in New York City. She's traveling throughout Europe, and he shows up unannounced to one of her performances after 4 years of not having any communication with him. He shows up to her performance. And so I'm going to read the very first chapter entitled Prelude to what is going through his mind before he has to see her after 4 years. It was a soft summer evening. An unyielding desert breeze gently gusts throughout the city. Moist hands eagerly gripped the steering wheel as the muddy pickup continued to race through sparse streets. A balmy breeze rushed through cracked windows and slammed against his face. Suddenly the truck's wheels screeched and immediately stopped in front of a flashing red parking sign. He frantically snatched $10 out of his wallet and thrust some money toward the parking lot attendant. The truck sped through the gaping gates and spun around the winding parking lot. The man suddenly smashed his foot against the brakes and continued to slowly curl around the parking deck's twisting, narrow ramp. He squinted and scoured at the rows jammed with parked cars. He finally located a vacant parking space, gently squeezed his truck between two compact cars, and snatched his keys away from the ignition. He frantically searched for his ballet ticket, slowly exhaled, grinned, and shoved the smooth ticket in his wallet. The man was 30 minutes late for the showing of Swan Lake. His breaths were short and labored as he exited the parking lot. He quickly scurried across the street towards the renowned Rialto Theater. The man rushed through the doors of the theater and suddenly felt insecure, as if a part of him had diminished. The theater's atrium was grand, regal, and adorned with rich burgundy and gold shades. "Sir, the ballet has already begun. You've missed 40 minutes of the first act." He cleared his throat and replied with a gruff tone, "Yes, I know." The man became nervous and quickly ran his fingers through his crisp, gelled hair. His hands quivered as he reached for the ballet program. The usher smiled and whispered, "You look nervous, sir. Don't worry, we'll seat you right away. As soon as the dance is complete, I'll show you to your seat. Let me just take a look at your ticket." The usher was a perky brunette. "You've missed 40 minutes of the first act." I'm sorry. The usher was a perky brunette, her bright blue eyes wide with excitement as she continued to speak. "Even though you're a bit late, I think you came at a great time. The prima ballerina is about to make her entrance onto the stage. She's incredible. I've seen Swan Lake 1,000 times, but I have to say, she really adds something special to this dance. She's amazing. She dances so beautiful, it's almost like she's floating, like she's from another world." The man suddenly felt queasy and became unsteady on his feet. "Your flowers are beautiful. I'm sure your date will love them. We better get you seated so you won't have to keep her waiting." The man smiled and began to clutch onto a dozen of red roses. "You're right. It's been a long time. I don't want to keep her waiting any longer." "Sir, right this way." The usher briskly walked down the dark aisle, waving her flashlight from side to side. The bright and lively symphonic rhythms filled the theater. The symphonic melodies immediately gripped the man's soul and transported him to another place in time. The music continued to play, and the melodic sounds were like no other rhythms he had ever heard before. The violins hummed, flutes chirped, and the French horns bounced off the theater's wall. "This is your seat, sir. I'm seating you just in time. There she is. The star has just come on the stage." He slowly sat down and immediately stretched his neck, eager to see her at last. The lead ballerina pranced onto the stage like a graceful gazelle. The sight of the dancing princess took the man's breath away. She was striking. He leaned forward in his seat to make sure that it was truly the girl that had been etched in his thoughts and memories for nearly 4 years. As she continued to twirl and glide across the stage, her shimmery white dress flowed and trailed behind her like white fluttering doves. The soft contours of her face and neck remained the same. He locked the memory of her sweet face and smile within the depths of his soul. The man quickly glanced at the program and looked up to see a cluster of bouncing ballerinas. It was indeed her, the young woman who was so instrumental in changing his life. A small tear gathered in his eyes. He thought he would never see her again. And yet, there she was, dancing before a packed theater, vivid and alive. She was more beautiful and poised than the images captured within his memory. The sadness once held in her eyes was now gone. Her eyes sparkled. He quickly wiped away a small tear. The man became embarrassed by his profound emotion over someone that he had only met for an hour nearly 4 years ago. He looked down at the dozen of roses lying across his lap. His thoughts raced to the moment when he could finally place the flowers in her arms. He was a new man, a man who had become completely transformed from the former man the star ballerina once knew. He wanted nothing more than to show her what he had become, what he could be. Now he could look her directly in her eyes and not feel ashamed to be in her presence. He was now worthy of her. As each moment passed, the man became completely enthralled by her intricate leaps and twists. When she completed her final dance and bow, the stage immediately became flooded with a shower of tossed flowers from the crowd. She continued to gently bow 10 times to a rousing standing ovation. Each time she gracefully bowed, the crowd's applause escalated. He wanted to shoot out of his seat and rush towards the stage to greet her, but he remained in the theater until the crowd gradually faded. And that's chapter one.
Wow. That is powerful. That is
Thank you.
Powerful. Ah, you are so talented.
Thank you very much. Thank God.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Wow. Boy, Giselle is having a big smile on her face, too, as you read it.
And there's more to come. This is such a story with so many twists and turns.
Yes. So beautiful. So beautiful. So beautiful. So what can we look forward to within the next 5 years?
5 years?
Mm-hmm.
5 more books. I want the strong, courageous, and committed seminars to become national. That,
mm-hmm.
And I want to take these seminars throughout the country to our
mm-hmm.
young women. So
mm-hmm.
that's my goals. That's my
goals.
Well,
from your mouth to God's ears.
Yes.
And, you know, we have not because we ask not, and this is not the case with you because you have just asked. And
that's right.
That is going to be one amazing impact on the world, and I'm just so honored that we're able to be having this conversation here, which will remain, it will be accessible to people on the archive. And I'll just ask people to share this dialogue because this is a dialogue that needs to be in the homes of people across the world. This is a dialogue that young boys and young girls need to be hearing that
Absolutely.
It can happen, whatever it is. Whatever that is that you have in your heart, you can accomplish it. You
That's
can accomplish
correct.
It. You just need to believe in yourself. I want, is there anything that you was hoping I would have asked that I have not yet asked you?
You know what? You exceeded my expectations. You really and I'm so thankful for that. You really exceeded
yes.
my expectations. I think you covered everything.
Yeah, God is good, you know. God is so good. God is so good.
Yes.
So what I'm going to ask you to do is to kind of summarize what you want to leave the listeners with. And then I'm going to ask you to give out your contact information at the end of that. And I would love us to continue this relationship and this conversation and see
Absolutely.
How we can add value to each other's vision and
mm-hmm.
mission because you are doing a phenomenal job. And young people
Thank you so much.
Need role models like you. And I'm thankful for LinkedIn that we were able to connect.
Yes, it's a blessing. And I thank you so much for having me, Dr. DeFane. Daphne, it's been a wonderful experience having this dialogue.
You are welcome. So let's just summarize now. What do you want to leave the people with?
I want to leave the people with, I don't want you to be a victim of your circumstance. We all have, like I said, everyone has a story. And unfortunately,
a lot of our stories are not happy stories.
Mm-hmm.
And you could overcome your circumstance through
mm-hmm.
just tapping into that, determining in your mind. For me, it was a relationship with God. And really making that decision, I'm not going to allow this to affect me. I want better. I want to know my purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I want mm-hmm. to do better.
Mm-hmm. Are you there?
Yes, not being a victim.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's no time to be a victim of your circumstance.
That's right.
Knowing that you have a unique purpose that's just for you. That's just
mm-hmm.
for you. I can't fulfill your purpose. I can't
mm-hmm.
fulfill your plan. Only you can.
Right. Only you can. Only
and
you.
Taking time away from all the madness to find out what is your purpose. And you have to take time away. You have to step aside. You have to have some still moments.
Mm-hmm.
Some quiet moments to understand
mm-hmm.
what direction you should take in your life. And that's what I would leave today with the listeners.
You, excuse me.
Are you okay?
Yes. You mentioned about your turn came. And it came more clearly once you establish or develop a relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ.
Right.
And as you look back on what portion of what you do now is impacted by your spiritual relationship?
Everything. I cannot, because of what I know, what the place, the dark place I was in for so many
mm-hmm.
years, the depression
mm-hmm.
I battled.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're delivered from that,
mm.
and when that God delivers
Hallelujah.
You from that, you cannot, I cannot write a story without including God in it. I just can't
Amen.
Do it. And if I have to write a story without God, I just won't write.
You won't write. Amen.
That's the place I come
Amen.
From because Amen. I know what I've been delivered from. And when you come from that depressed, dark place year after year, and all of a sudden you come into a place of light, and you know that, you know, everybody's experience is different. And I say experience, you have to experience to know what I'm
yes.
talking about.
That's
and once
right.
you've experienced that, no one can tell you any different. And
That's
so
right.
there is no me without God. I can't separate the two. I just can't. And so that's the place where I come from.
You know, and I'm thankful that the Holy Spirit have me ask that question even after we summarize, because there's
right.
somebody, some people out there who need to know. It doesn't matter how dark it is where you are now. There is light.
There is.
There's light.
Absolutely.
Hold on.
I know
there
firsthand.
Is light.
I know firsthand. And sometimes you have to be in a dark place to understand how beautiful the light
right.
is.
Exactly, to embrace and appreciate it.
Right.
Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. I want you to give your information out about how people can contact you and where they can find your books.
Okay, all of my books are on Amazon. If you type in Camille Kleidich, I'll spell my last name, K-L-E-I, D as in dog, Y as in yo-yo, S as in Z, S as in Sam, I'm sorry, Z as in zebra, Kleidich. If you just type in the last name, Kleidich, my books will come up. My contact information is Nazareth Heights, Nazareth like the Bible, N-A-Z-A, R-E-T-H, Heights, H-E-I-G-H-T-S, that's all one word, lowercase, at yahoo.com.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You could find me on Twitter. My username is my last name, Kleidich. My website is Camille Kleidich, C-A-M-I-L-L-E, K-L-E-I-D-Y-S. z.weebly.com. That's my website, my email, and I spend a lot of time on Twitter. So if you want to join me in the conversation, that's where I am. I love tweeting. You will see me in my silly moments, my serious moments, my moments where I'm being inspirational. That's where I am on Twitter.
Okay. When are you having another program for girls in Atlanta? Do you have anything all planned already?
Well, actually, something I'm having a program coming up in April, but it's going to be in Alabama, Huntsville, Alabama.
Okay.
So I guess I'm going to another state.
How can they get information on that?
That you would have to contact me.
Okay.
Contact my email. Mm-hmm. Now, it's heights@yahoo.com.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for spending this quality time with us this morning. And
thank you so much
for
having me.
Yes, on the work that you are doing. And I want to encourage you to stop by our show, radio show site. Mark it as a favorite so you can be kept informed as to who my guests are and become a friend. And I look forward to us, working and collaborating together.
Yes, absolutely. It's a wonderful work you're doing as well. Thank you so much for sharing with the community.
Thank you so very much. And we have 17 minutes remaining here on the show, and I want to just go ahead and give a little bit of housekeeping. Feel free if you want to hang around, Camille. It's all up to you. And if your time does not allow for that, I understand too. But I know we will have you back on the show here.
Okay, wonderful.
This conversation was with Mrs. Camille Clydish, and what an amazing work she is doing. And just to show us that it does not really matter how dark that place we are gets, there is light. How often we hear that there's always light at the end of the tunnel. But I think that there are times when we do not believe that. But you heard it firsthand today. She gave living examples and support of her work, of the conversations she has had with teenagers who broke the mold of what society thought of teenagers who come from that era. So, is that you today? Are you listening? Are you in a dark place? Have you been told that you're like your father, you're like your mother, nothing will come from you? You got to break that mold. You got to tell yourself the buck stops here, and it will not happen any further. You have to bind it, and you have to create the difference that you want. It could be for your community, it could be for your family, and it could just be for your neighborhood. This responsibility is yours. Do not allow anyone to tell you otherwise. I want to read a few little quotes here. First one is about focus. It says, if you chase two rabbits, both will escape. So it's important. You remember Camille spoke about, finding what it is that you were called to do. And I want to share with you now that when you find it, you need to focus on it. What makes a leader? If your action inspire others to dream more, learn more, do more, and become more, then you are a leader. The essence of leadership. They don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. you know, there's a statement we make in our leadership training is that people will always remember how you make them feel. You give them all the stuff and they forget it, but that feeling lingers for years. It goes into the first chapter that Camille read from her book, and that first encounter that gentleman had was only an hour, and 4 years later, he remembered it. So these are all things that you can put into your life. Leadership, you get the best efforts from others, not by lighting them on fire beneath them, but by building a fire within them. So you're not going to get any result when you put people on the hot bench, but you work and support and believe in what they are doing, and that's what leaders does. I want to encourage you to, if you live in the Connecticut area or upstate New York, we are looking for host families for French students July the 10th through the 30th and August the 2nd through the 22nd. I want to encourage you to also visit my new website, Marquee, M-A-R-Q-U-E-E, global.com. Check that out. We have the Dreaming Room that we are working on getting up, and a lot of other things that we are doing there. So just check our new image out and support us in whatever way you can. And if you know of an empowering story, one that will educate, inspire, inform, and educate my listeners, call me up or send me an email via the radio site, and I will have that person on air so long as the story is in sync with the work that we are doing. I want to remind and encourage you that we are on the air every Wednesday between the hours of 10 a.m. and noon Eastern Standard Time, daylight saving time now here. We are also on the air on Sundays at 7 p.m. And the Sunday episodes and segment take place dealing with life stories, any story that you reinvented your life or you overcame adversities or any other empowering story. I want to help you to tell your story. And as I always say, remember that you were born with greatness. You were created with a specific destiny. You heard Camille Clydes share about what her professor told her about writing. Never force a story, allow the story to find you. And when her story did find her, she fought it a little, but she was obedient 3 years later on, and she embraced the story. And this is part of who she is now. It has helped her to create program for young people and to be making a phenomenal difference in the world. What is your story? Will you tell your story? Will you allow your story to help others to heal? This is Dynamic Daphne saying, follow your destiny and do not allow anyone to tell you otherwise. I'll see you on Sunday and on Wednesday right here on Blog Talk Radio.
What's the plight that you've called me to?
the thing I'm set aside to do. I trust you, Lord, to see me through. Will you let me look in your heart? Begin to praise him. Hallelujah.